No exaggeration, these people were the original Sopranos.
Oh, he knew he was a bad boy.
Uncover a darker side of life with Gangster, Fairy Meadow, and Fake Psychic.
You know that old saying, confession's good for the soul.
Listen to True Crime Podcasts on BBC Sounds.
Now on Radio 4, it's time to enter the mind of the American humorist Simon Rich as more of his absurd stories are brought to life by a British cast, including Matt Bainton, Kieran Hodgson, Carriad Lloyd and Claire Price. Tonight we discover if the world's mightiest superhero has finally met his match, and there are some handy lesser-known parenting tips.
Welcome to the world of Simon Rich.
Clobbo peered down at the city lights below. It was a quiet evening in Empire City, but he knew from experience that danger could strike at any turn. 20 years ago, on a night as calm as this one, the space slugs had invaded and brought the bustling city to its knees. The people had needed a hero, and Clobbo had answered the call. Half man, half ape, with fists the size of boulders, he'd escaped from the laboratory where he'd been created and charged straight at the enemy, smashing the alien insects into goo. In the years that followed, Clobbo had rescued the metropolis from multiple alien invaders, including the space worms and the moon bugs. His rescues grew so frequent that the city built him his own lair, the Fortress of Justice, a towering structure perched on the city's tallest hill. It had been some time since the last invasion, but now, it seemed, the wait was over. Clobbo could see it flashing through the darkness, the famous Clobbo signal, a bright neon outline of a giant monkey fist. He let out a roar and jumped through a plate glass window, too eager to wait for any elevator. At long last, it was Clobbo time. Clobbo stood on the steps of City Hall, squinting at the group of officials assembled by his feet. He didn't recognise a single one of them.
Where is Mayor Brock?
The officials exchanged awkward glances.
Mayor Brock retired last year. I'm the new mayor. My name is Andy McPherson.
Oh, Clobbo did not know. Clobbo, sorry.
Yeah, man, no problem.
Where are aliens?
Listen, there's something we've been meaning to talk to you about.
Okay.
Right, so you might not be aware of this, but since the financial crisis, we've entered into an era of austerity. And given the infrequency of alien attacks these past few decades, we just don't think it makes financial sense to continue to operate the Fortress of Justice.
But that is Clobbo's lair.
It's just too expensive to maintain.
Clobbo's heart began to race.
But what happened to Clobbo? Where Clobbo go? What Clobbo do?
Glad you asked, because I've got some great news. We're promoting you to a management position.
Clobbo eyed him skeptically.
Management?
Yep.
Clobbo never managed before.
Don't worry, you'll be brilliant.
Clobbo bowed his head, a bashful smile spreading across his face.
Really? You think Clobbo can handle?
Of course. We believe in you, right, everyone?
His staff nodded in unison. Clobbo felt his large back straighten.
What is title?
What was it, Kevin?
Kevin, a young aide, stepped forward.
Senior Coordinator for the Office of Community Affairs.
Senior Coordinator! Wow!
Clobbo looked the mayor in the eye, his jaw clenched with purpose.
Clobbo will not let you down. Clobbo will work hard at management. Clobbo will answer the call.
When he got home, Clobbo paced across his living room.
Clobbo going to need new clothes! Clobbo need tie! Clobbo need shoe!
His wife, Mimi, smiled up at him.
Oh, I'm so proud of you, sweetheart. My husband, the executive.
She reached for his paw, but he was moving too fast for her to grab it.
Clobbo need to go to bed by 10. Clobbo need to leave early in the morning. Clobbo need to allow time for learning new commute.
If you're a bit late, I'm sure they'll understand.
No! Clobbo cannot be late to first day.
Well, you won't be. I'll make sure of it.
Maybe you set your alarm too. That way we have two alarms. Clobbo's alarm is regular alarm, and your alarm is backup alarm.
Yep, you got it.
Okay, that is our plan. We will do two alarms.
He took a seat next to her on the sofa, causing his side to droop and her side to rise up in the air. It was their favourite way to sit together, since it put them on eye level. She stroked his furry face while he slowly caught his breath.
You know, I was thinking, now that you're in management, it might be a good opportunity to try to strive for a better work-life balance.
Clobbo, do not understand.
Well, just, you know, since you've got more power now, maybe you could try to be home sometimes by dinner, or even take a Friday off so we can drive to Winchester to see Eli and the kids.
Clobbo stood up abruptly, sending Mimi sinking to the floor.
Clobbo cannot take any Friday off! Empire City is counting on me!
He bounded across the carpet.
Where are you going?
Clobbo, go to buy third alarm clock! Clobbo, do not trust our alarm clocks because they are old! Clobbo, go to 24-hour supermarket and buy new alarm clock that is better brand than our alarm clocks!
Well, could you at least take the stairs?
Clobbo, clean up later!
Mimi stood and watched as her husband swung down the street, leaping wildly from lamppost to lamppost, the metal beams bending under his massive weight. Some teenagers on scooters pointed up at him and laughed. Mimi hoped he was moving too quickly to notice. Clobbo got to work 4 hours early. He didn't have a key card yet, so he spent the morning pacing around the lobby, stopping at each mirror to scrutinise his outfit. He still wasn't fully confident in his executive look. At 12 feet tall and 1,900 pounds, shopping for business clothes had been a challenge. Mimi had managed to find him a pair of XXXXL khakis, but when he'd tried them on at dawn, the seams had exploded, leaving him no choice but to tie the garment over his crotch like a nappy. In lieu of a tie, he'd painted a red stripe on his chest. His shoes were buckets. After several hours of silent pacing, Clobbo spotted Mayor McPherson across the entrance hall.
Hello, Mayor! Where we go first? Where is first manage?
Hello, Clobbo. I actually have to get to a staff meeting.
Okay, great! Clobbo, come with! We kill staff together!
Thing is, Clobbo, you're not really needed in the staff meeting.
Why not?
Because you have more important things to do. And the person who is going to help you do those things is...
He eyed his row of aides, all of whom avoided his gaze.
Your new assistant, Kevin.
Kevin glared at the mayor with undisguised betrayal. Clobbo patted the man violently on his back.
Do not worry, Kevin. Clobbo will manage you. Clobbo tell you everything to do for the rest of your whole life.
Kevin stared into the distance as his fellow aides began to chuckle. Clobbo didn't understand the joke, but he joined in anyway.
Ha ha ha! Clobbo understand joke!
Kevin led Clobbo to his office on the 18th floor. It required some effort for him to squeeze his body through the doorway. But once he saw his desk, his disappointment turned to pride. There, engraved in bronze, was a nameplate with his new official title, Clobbo the Monkey Man, Senior Coordinator for the Office of Community Affairs. He rubbed it softly with his giant thumb, trying not to bend the metal.
I'll give you the Wi-Fi code.
Yes, good. Clobbo need that for manage.
The I in city is a 1, and the A in hall is the at symbol.
Clobbo do not understand.
If you want, I could set it up on your laptop.
Clobbo do not have laptop. Clobbo do not know computers. Clobbo born in lab, and then Clobbo escape from lab and become hero.
Right, I know.
Clobbo escaped from lab and then he smashed slugs! They came from space! Clobbo smashed them and get key to city!
Yeah.
Clobbo idly scratched his stomach fur.
Do you want to grab some lunch with Clobbo?
It's 9 a.m.
Clobbo know that! Clobbo was making joke! Ha 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 ha!
Oh. Well, listen, I've got a transportation proposal to proofread, but if you need anything, I'll be right outside.
Okay.
Clobbo watched as Kevin closed the door, leaving him in almost total darkness. He noticed that the post-it note Kevin had written the Wi-Fi code on had been set down at a slightly crooked angle on his desk. He attempted to straighten it, but his anxiety made his movements clumsy and he ended up breaking the entire desk in half.
Is everything okay in there?
Everything fine!
Clobbo looked down and saw that his nameplate had fallen by his feet. He tried to put it back where it had been, but his desk was slanted now like a gabled roof. And no matter where he placed it, the thing just slid right back to the floor. When he returned home, Clobbo's wife climbed up a ladder to scrub the red tie stripe off his chest.
Clobbo have fancy corner office. Clobbo have his own nameplate. Everything is good at work and normal.
Oh, that's great, sweetheart.
You will come to City Hall someday. Clobbo will give you grand tour of new office. There is problem with desk where it come from factory with giant crack in middle. It look like somebody smash it, but it come that way. But other than that, everything in the office good.
Honey, are you okay?
Clobbo fine. Clobbo have no problems.
There's something you're not telling me. I can tell.
Clobbo stressed about work.
Mimi climbed up a step on the ladder so she could speak to him in a softer tone.
Oh, sweetheart, of course you're stressed. This is a lot of responsibility.
Yes, that is what it is. There is so much for Clobbo to do. Clobbo have to manage all day. And nobody is good except for Clobbo. So Clobbo have to do everything for everybody because Clobbo is the only one who knows how to do things.
Oh, honey, that sounds really tough. I know what will cheer you up.
She took out her phone and dialed a number.
Eli and Becca are expecting us to call.
Oh, okay.
He watched as his son and daughter-in-law popped onto her phone.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the present.
What present?
Oh, I just sent them something for the both of us.
Oh, right. I remember. You are welcome.
So, did you kids have any fun plans for Thursday?
What is Thursday?
It's our anniversary. It's why you sent the present.
Oh, Clobbo, sorry. Clobbo distracted with new job. Clobbo manage now.
So anyway, Mum, Oliver wants to tell you what his favourite part of the present is.
He tilted the phone, revealing Clobbo's grandson, a three-year-old boy in pyjamas.
Bubble wrap!
Oliver stomped ineffectively on a sheet of bubble wrap. Mimi clapped her hands and laughed.
Oh, you were the same way, Eli. Oh, no matter what we got you, that was your favourite part. Do you remember, honey? Oh, how Eli, he loved bubble wrap.
There was a long pause.
Clobbo, sorry. Clobbo was not paying attention. What were you saying to Clobbo?
I'm sorry, Eli. Look, your father is obviously a little bit distracted.
It's fine. I'm used to it. Anyway, it's almost bath time, so we should get going.
Oh, already?
Yeah, Mum. Sorry. Gotta go.
Mimi shot Clobbo a disappointed look as the phone went black.
Clobbo, sorry.
But she was already climbing down the ladder, taking the rungs two at a time.
Clobbo will give you tour of office soon. Clobbo will show you nameplate. Clobbo will make you proud.
Over the course of the next few weeks, Clobbo began to suspect that his assistant, Kevin, didn't fully respect him as a manager. He never did anything overtly insubordinate, but Clobbo had noticed certain subtle clues, like the way he rolled his eyes whenever Clobbo spoke to him and sighed and swore and whispered,
"Unbelievable."
Clobbo tried his best to win Kevin's respect, frequently visiting his desk to try to manage him.
Clobbo need numbers. You give Clobbo numbers now.
Which numbers?
You tell me. You are supposed to know which numbers. You find out which numbers and you show to Clobbo.
I don't know what you want. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
These conversations left Clobbo feeling rattled. Had he said something that gave him some cause to be embarrassed? He wished there was some way to tell. One morning, Clobbo ran out of red paint and had to paint his tie on using tomato ketchup. By the time he finished swinging to work, it was almost 10:15. He was relieved to find his floor was empty. There was no one there to see his late arrival. But his calm was shaken by a distant peal of laughter. He followed the noise and found himself walking down a corridor he had never seen before. At the end of it was a large conference room, crammed with at least 50 of his colleagues. Mayor McPherson was sitting at the head of a long table with Kevin by his side. The mayor's mood was chipper, but when he saw Clobbo, his expression grew noticeably tense.
Hi, Clobbo. Happy Monday.
What is this meeting? Nobody told Clobbo there was meeting.
Well, that's probably just because it's not for your department.
It seems like it is Clobbo's department.
Clobbo pointed at a nearby PowerPoint slide reading Office of Community Affairs.
Clobbo is Community Affairs, and this is Community Affairs.
The mayor nervously drummed the table with his fingers.
Huh, that's so odd. It must have been an oversight by Kevin.
He smiled apologetically at Kevin, but Kevin refused to make eye contact with him.
I put it on his iCalendar last month. It's not my fault if he didn't check it.
Clobber wasn't sure what an iCalendar was, but he could feel everyone's eyes on him.
It was not on Clobber's iCalendar! Kevin did not tell me, because he is bad assistant!
Okay, we can table this.
No! It cannot wait, because it is important! Kevin, you are always making mistake! You never give Clobber numbers!
What numbers would you like, Clobber? Tell me, and I'll happily provide them.
I want numbers for community affairs!
Literally, every piece of data is available on the server. If you bothered to read the daily briefings...
Clobber reads daily briefings! Clobber reads it more than you, Kevin, because you are bad at job!
Okay, if you read the daily briefings, then what did you think of this morning's banana report?
Clobber hate banana report!
Yeah, well, there is no banana report.
Clobber's stomach lurched as a ripple of involuntary giggling spread across the room. He could feel sweat pouring down his back and pooling in his giant khaki nappy. His fists instinctively began to flash and pulse, and for a moment he considered smashing everyone to death. But his anger quickly passed, replaced by a dull and throbbing nausea. He blinked his big red eyes, trying to hold back his tears.
I'm sorry, Clobber. It's my fault. I should have made sure you knew about this meeting.
Clobber, sorry. Clobber should have read daily briefings. Clobber should have read Kevin's banana report.
As Clobber's voice began to crack, Kevin hung his head, his anger toward Clobber finally giving way to full-on pity.
Clobber, resign.
You don't have to resign. You're doing a great job.
Please, stop lying to Clobber. Stop torturing Clobber. Let Clobber go while he still has some dignity.
Clobber headed for the door, but his angle of entry was off and he got stuck.
Clobber need 5 people to push on his butt. 2 on left side, 2 on right, and whoever strongest go in middle.
The mayor and Kevin stood up, along with some other aides, and worked to shove Clobber through the door. It took several minutes, and the application of a tube of hand lotion, but eventually Clobber was dislodged. As he crawled away, his khaki nappy caught on the edge of a desk, leaving him completely naked. He didn't have the space to turn around, so all he could do was keep on trudging down the path, whichever way it led. Clobber spent the next 2 months in bed. Whenever Mimi asked him about his decision to retire, he gave her cryptic answers such as,
Clobber decide he need new challenge.
Or,
Clobber need space to start new chapter.
Mimi tried to feign enthusiasm, but she knew that he had failed. And worse, on some level, Clobber knew she knew. One day, a package arrived from City Hall. Mayor McPherson had sent Clobber a farewell key to the city. Mimi tried to get Clobber excited about it, but he saw the gift for the pitying gesture that it was. He shoved the box in the corner of their bedroom and left it there, unopened. He hadn't felt so low since he was a kid, and being subjected to torture experiments by the evil scientist who made him. It had not been a happy childhood. It wasn't anything specific Dr. Skull had done, but on some level he'd just never felt completely valued. It wasn't until he started fighting aliens that he developed anything resembling self-esteem. He remembered how proud he'd been the first time he saw his face on the cover of the Empire Inquirer. They were the ones who dubbed him Clobber. He'd never had a nickname before. When he was growing up, everyone had always just addressed him by his birth name, Monkey Torture Test Subject 12X. It wasn't lost on him that the box from City Hall had been addressed to Clobo with a K. The receptionist who'd posted him the key was probably too young to have ever seen his name in print. The next generation would most likely never hear it uttered. The Clobo name was gradually being erased, like a space slug being pummeled into goo. It was while these grim thoughts were swirling through his brain that his wife's phone rang abrasively. Clobber forced a smile as his son and grandson popped onto the screen.
Thanks for the birthday present.
What birthday present?
I just sent Oliver a toy from both of us.
Oh, Clobber, sorry.
Anyway, I can't talk for long. Oliver is having another tantrum.
Clobber watched as the toddler screamed, his nostrils flared, his small fists clenched. He felt a similar way. Mimi smiled into the camera.
Oh, maybe I can cheer him up. Old MacDonald had a farm. E-I-E-I-O.
Clubber wandered away from the couch. He couldn't handle talking to his family right now. What was the point? He had nothing to offer to them or to anybody else. He was climbing into bed when he tripped over his package from the city. He idly tore it open and turned the key over in his paw. It was the cheapest model he had ever seen. Aluminium, probably. Or maybe even plastic. "Thanks for the memories," read a note from Mayor MacPherson, typed on generic Empire City letterhead. He hadn't even bothered to sign it with a pen. He was about to crawl under the covers when he caught sight of something else inside the box. He stared at it, the wheels slowly turning in his mind. Tentatively, his palms began to pulse.
"And on that farm he had some chicks! E-I-E-I-O!"
He could hear Mimi losing steam in the living room, her singing drowned out by the toddler's swelling cries.
"Oh, well, we can try again some other time."
"Do not hang up!"
He hurried back into the living room, clutching the cardboard package in his hands.
"What's going on?"
"Oh, your father got a new key to the city. I think he wants to show it to you."
"No, that is not it. Look, little boy, Clubbo have something for you."
He reached into the box and took out a large plastic sheet.
"Babu has bubble wrap."
"Who is Babu?"
"That's what he's been calling you. I don't know why."
The toddler pointed his finger at the screen.
"Can Babu do bubble wrap?"
Mimi nudged her husband indulgently.
"Oh, that shouldn't be a problem. Like, you might not know this, but your grandfather used to pop squishy things for a living."
Clubbo raised a paw, gently waving off the praise. He looked into the phone and nodded at his grandson.
"Babu can do bubble wrap, and Babu will do it now."
The toddler watched as his grandfather laid the sheet over his knee and rolled his fist over the plastic, setting off a long cascade of pops. His grandson sighed contentedly and he smiled at him with pride.
"Mo?"
"Babu is not sure if there is more. That might be all there is."
The boy's lower lip began to quiver.
"Babu will see if there is more."
Eli and Mimi watched as he frantically rummaged through the box, tossing aside the flimsy key and digging through the styrofoam. When he got to the bottom, he was so relieved that tears came to his eyes.
"There is more! Babu has more! Babu can do more!"
Mimi rubbed her husband's furry back as he took out the bubble wrap and carefully set it on his knee.
"Babu will do more. You watch, Babu."
He took a deep breath and held up a fist for the camera.
"Babu do more now. Now it is Babu time."
Everyday Parenting Tips.
We've all been there. The teeth are brushed, the PJs are on, and the blankie is just right. You're tiptoeing out of the nursery when suddenly you hear, "Mummy, Mummy, there's a monster under my bed." You let out a sigh. Looks like that new episode of Love Island is going to have to wait. Children have always been afraid of monsters, but lucky for you, we're up to the challenge. So let's open up that mailbag.
Is it normal for my child to be afraid of monsters?
Yes. If anything, it's evidence of a healthy imagination.
How do I convince my child that there's no such thing as monsters?
Just be patient. By the age of 5, your child should understand that the monsters she's afraid of are not real.
What if the monsters she's afraid of are real?
Unfortunately, this is becoming increasingly common in the aftermath of the Great Monster Uprising. Ever since the creatures descended from the dark place several years ago, their presence on Earth has become an unavoidable aspect of our daily lives. If your child is afraid of an actual, real-life monster, such as Gorgog, the Annihilator, or Tharga, the Eater of Souls, try to explain to her that, although those monsters are obviously real, the likelihood of them attacking her is only moderate.
Should I restrict my child's media access to keep her away from upsetting imagery?
Most parents agree it's wise to shield kids from scary content. At the same time, experts warn it may be futile to try to stop your kids from seeing monsters altogether.
What if my child is having nightmares?
Again, this is completely normal. The exception, of course, is when your child has been marked by a monster who is using her dreams to try to form a covenant with her. Ask your child for details about her nightmare. Did the monster address her by her Christian name? Was she asked to sign his book? If the answer is no, then reassure her it was only a dream, probably.
My child is also afraid of the drain. Is that normal?
I am going to assume you mean the drain of Gar, and yes, it's normal for her to be afraid of it. After all, it's a giant swirling portal in the sky that looks like a screaming mouth. Nobody knows where it came from or what's going on with it. It's terrifying.
When my daughter gets upset about monsters, my husband makes jokes to try and cheer her up. I'm worried he's making the problem worse. What do you think?
Your husband is probably a monster. Drug him at dinner, and when he's unconscious, strip his body naked. If he's been husked, he will have the mark of Korthar on his chest. If he has the mark, cut off his head.
How long will this phase last?
Experts agree that the age of monsters is just getting started. There is no end in sight. This is simply the new normal, and we all have to accept it.
What do I do if I'm feeling overwhelmed?
It's important to do what you can to manage your anxiety. Otherwise, you might end up modelling nervous behaviour for your child, which could in turn cause her to experience stress of her own. Or maybe you should just be straight with her.
What do you mean?
Maybe when your child asks if something's wrong, you should just tell her the truth. Yes, something is very wrong. Monsters are real and they are out there everywhere trying to kill us.
Won't that frighten her?
She's frightened already and she should be.
So, what are you saying? What am I supposed to do? Just give up?
You could give up. Or you could fight.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about taking those monsters down.
Whoa. So, hold on. Isn't that impossible?
Maybe, but isn't it worth a shot? Isn't it better than just sitting there waiting to die?
Well, I can't.
You can.
I'm scared.
I know, but you're stronger than you think. You can do this.
How?
Research the monsters, learn their weaknesses, develop a strategy, stockpile weapons, train obsessively, strengthen your body and your mind.
And then what?
When the moment comes, look your child in the eye. Tell her that the stakes are high, but you're not giving up. Tell her that you will do anything you can to protect her. And even though it's possible, you'll fail. You're going to fight for her with everything you've got. Tell her, if these damn monsters think that they can mess with my family without me shooting them in the face first, they have another thing coming, because I'm going to smash them all to hell. Watch the strength return to your child as she sees you're in no way joking. Listen with pride as she vows to fight the monsters by your side. Look out the window and stare down the monsters together. Dare them to mess with your family. Dare them to mess with the people that you love. Take your child by the hand. Arm her to the teeth. Tell her you love her. Open the door.
The World of Simon Rich starred Matt Bainton, Eddie Ealls-White...
No, Kevin! Clobbo read credits! The World of Simon Rich starred Matt Bainton, Ed Ealls-White, Kieran Hodgson, Carriad Lloyd, Claire Price, and Johnny Salmon. It was written by Simon Rich, and it was produced by John Harvey and Clarissa Maycock. It is Naked Production for BBC Radio 4.
Simon and the team will be back with more Tales of the Absurd at the same time next week. While tomorrow's 6:30 comedy stars Joanna Lumley and Roger Allam in Conversations from a Long Marriage. Roger's caught talking in his